This happened 2 years ago, and it still puts me on edge thinking about it. My husband, myself, and our then 2-year-old daughter moved to Tennessee to get a fresh start on life. We were all exhausted after a long drive and just wanted to get out the mattresses. My parents, who lived in Tennessee already, were helping us unload. Naturally, all the neighbors in our apartment complex came out and said hi. That's when we met Ben. Right away, I got creepy vibes off of him. Our daughter, who to this day is way too friendly to strangers, hid behind my husband and visibly cringed. We made small talk, but mainly paid more attention to unloading our stuff than chatting with our new neighbors. My dad later told me that at one point, he came back to the truck and saw Ben staring at our daughter. My dad called him out, and when Ben denied it, my husband eventually told him to go f***. Later that night, me and my husband were still going through our stuff. Our daughter was staying the night at my parents' house. It was about 10:30 p.m. when we heard a knock at the door. Thinking that it was the pizza that I ordered, my husband opened the door, and there stood Ben. He asked us if we needed any help. Him showing up at our door so late at night, even for a friendly neighbor, was just creepy. Before we could tell him to get lost, he demanded a cigarette. Not only was he a total weirdo, but now he was just being plain rude. Neither of us smoked, and when we told him, he got a bit pissed. He started yelling and screaming at my husband, and began pounding on the wall. This guy was unhinged. Thankfully, our landlord lived across the way from us at the time, and came out to tell him off. As Ben sauntered away, our landlord explained to us that Ben is the resident pest and suffered from mental issues, but overall was harmless as long as he took his meds. Yeah, because that's exactly what you want to hear on your first night in a new place. After that, life kind of fell into place, and we settled in without any further disruptions. We had crazy schedules and would sometimes work graveyard shifts. I would get home around midnight and would see Ben standing outside the apartment buildings. He would always seem to be staring at me. I would just ignore him, mainly because I was just too tired and wanted to get to bed. He would always ask me for cigarettes, and I kept telling him that I didn't smoke. My husband said that he did the same thing to him. We would change up our work times just to throw Ben off a little, and at first, it worked, but Ben started to pester us during the day. On our days off, we would take our kid to the park or the mountains. One time, Ben asked to come with us, said that he was great with kids, and that we could trust him alone with our daughter. I really should have just let my husband deck him in the face right then and there. When we came back, he was sitting in our parking spot, said that he was making sure no one parked in it. He then tried to hug our daughter, and she screamed and clung on to me for dear life. I took her into the house while my husband finally snapped and really gave the guy an earful, telling him just to leave us alone. We told the landlord, but they played the whole mental issues card. And look, I get it. Mental illness is never fun to deal with, but he was constantly harassing and terrifying my daughter, and we have a duty to protect our family. It got to the point where my daughter didn't want to go outside because the bad man would be out there and stare at her. We threatened to cut our lease if something wasn't done about it. I began talking to my other neighbors, and everyone seemed to have the same type of experience. One of my neighbors told me that he and another neighbor saw Ben staring at some of the young girls wearing bathing suits and short shorts by the community pool, and they chased him off. They reported this to the landlord, but nothing was ever done. After about a month, things had quieted down. Ben wasn't spotted outside anymore. In fact, no one really saw him. We figured he moved away or something. Good riddance. We were thinking about moving in with my folks, while we saved up the money for a real house. One night, I came home from work early. My husband was out of town because of work, and my parents had taken our daughter to visit some family. I decided to play Saints Row 4 and relax after working an 11-hour shift. I was deep into the game when someone knocked on the door. It was about 10 p.m. at this point. If anyone was coming over that late, they would have called or texted first. I got up to see who it was. Before I got to the door, the knob began to shake violently. Then I heard Ben screaming,
"Let me in! Open this goddamn door!"
The heavy knocking turned into him slamming his shoulder against the door. He was screaming like a deranged madman. I grabbed my phone, the sharpest knife that we had from the kitchen, and hid in the closet. Cliche, I know, but if he managed to get in, there would at least be some distance between us. I called 911, and they said that my other neighbors had called in as well. It was only after I heard the sirens stop and voices yelling outside that I felt safe to come out. I opened my door and saw a cop pinning Ben face down on the ground. The landlord was screaming at the cop to let him go, and he even shoved him. Both of them ended up being arrested. I gave my report, and each one of my neighbors backed up everything I said, and even added in their own experiences. My sweet church lady neighbor called my husband and parents to let them know what was going on, and she even let me stay with her and her family for the night. But after what happened, I couldn't sleep at all. I kept thinking that at any moment I would hear Ben's deranged screaming and pounding from outside. It turns out Ben was a registered sex offender. Rumor has it that the landlord was aware of it, but willingly overlooked it, as Ben's family would slip him extra money as long as he was allowed to stay there. That's why nothing was ever done about his behavior. Makes me sick. Ben really did take meds, but had not been on any of them for the past few months. He tried to tell the cops that our daughter was his, and that we kidnapped her, and that I was having an affair with him. Crazy, right? Last thing I heard, Ben was placed in some institution. I'm not sure if it was prison or a psych ward. A landlord was fired and pretty much chased out of town. Good riddance. We were offered 3 months rent-free for our trouble, but that was ultimately our breaking point. We sold off most of our belongings and moved in with my parents. I'm happy to say that we have a house now, and our daughter is not afraid to go outside anymore. And yes, we checked all of our neighbors for red dots.
This story takes place in the early 1990s. I was 10 or 11 at the time. My family and I lived in a rural area near Kansas City. This particular area nowadays is very different from what it was in the 90s. Back in the day, it was a very country-like atmosphere. The road that we lived on was a gravel road, and the traffic was very sporadic. Typically, the only people who drove down our road were people who lived on our street, and there were only a few houses on our street at the time. Across the street from the house that we moved into, there was a large cornfield with a few trees near the road. There were a few other boys my age who lived on our street, and we all thought it would be fun to build a treehouse or a fort of some kind. I was across the street nearly every day, and my friends would often walk to my house and then we would go across the street to play in the fort. Think of that scene in the 1990 TV miniseries of Stephen King's It, where the Losers Club was building that dam in the river outside Derry. Yep, it's just like that. One day, I was across the street with one of the other boys. We noticed that there was a small blue car that would drive up and down the street very slowly. Since our road was very narrow and gravelly, it was not unusual for people to drive kind of slow. But this car in particular was driving extremely slow. I noticed that the driver would look out of his window and just sort of eyeball me every time that he drove by. I saw him at least two or three times that afternoon, but at the time, I remember thinking that he probably either just was curious about our playhouse, or that he was lost and maybe contemplating about asking us for directions. After a while, my friend had to go home, so I was there all by myself. Not long after my friend had left, I saw that same blue car slowly coming down the street once again. But this time, he came to a stop. The driver just sat there and stared at me for a while. I got this uneasy feeling about him. I knew all about stranger danger, even at that age. I began to feel that something bad was going to happen. My dad's words echoed in my head. If a stranger tries to grab you, you run as fast as you can and you scream your head off. I started thinking about which direction I should take off to. I knew that if I ran in the opposite direction of the guy in the car, I would be running into a cornfield that was at least a mile wide in every direction. If I were to run towards my house, I would have to cross the street, meaning that I would have to go past the creepy guy in the car to get to my home. The situation terrified me. My heartbeat escalated as I tried to figure out what the hell I was going to do. While deciding which direction would give me the best chance of getting away, I noticed the man in the car reach down for something. I never did see what he was going for, but something told me that if I didn't start running at that moment, I would be history. I then saw the man open the car door just a crack. I knew my dad was home at the time, so I decided to make a break for it. I knew that I was going to have to cross the street and I would have to get past the man's car. I began running as fast as I could alongside the road in the opposite direction of where his car was facing. I could see out of the corner of my eye that the guy had closed his door. When I reached the road, the driver had put his car in reverse. If I had been a second slower, I wouldn't have made it. The trunk of his car barely missed me as I darted away from the street to my driveway. I began screaming as loud as I could while charging towards my house. My dad ran outside to meet me in the driveway. When I had turned around to show my dad the man in the car, he was gone. All I could see was the dust cloud coming off the gravel road as the mysterious man in his blue car sped out of there. That night, I had a nightmare. I was running down a seemingly endless gravel road. I was panting, sweating, terrified. I would look back and see that blue car getting closer and closer. I woke up my parents. Apparently, I had been yelling in my sleep. I had to sleep in their room for a while, but the night terrors eventually did stop. This was nearly 2 decades ago, but I still remember it very well. There is no doubt in my mind that the man in the blue car was the monsters that your parents tell you about when you're a kid. Had I not run off when I did, I would probably be nothing but a statistic today. I occasionally hear stories about kids who went missing in my area in the 90s, and I wonder if it has anything to do with that man in the blue car. I may never know for sure, but I understand now why my dad always told me to run and scream. I'll be instructing my own children someday to do the same.
My mother was 14 in 1986 when this happened. She lived in China at the time with her parents and younger brother. It was deep into winter when this occurred, and the temperature dropped into the negatives. Snow was falling in thick layers onto the ground. It was around 10 p.m. when my mother finished up her classes, and by then, it was dark. Bear in mind, in China, it's normal for young students to walk home alone without a parent or guardian. About 10 minutes after getting off the bus, she began walking through this old marketplace to get to her apartment. The marketplace was completely quiet and deserted at this time of night. There was also no lampposts around, so it was hard for my mom to properly see where she was going. But she had traveled this route several times before, so she was familiar and knew her way back home. My mother had this feeling that someone was lurking in the darkness of the marketplace. She tried to shrug it off, but the apprehension persisted. She continued to hear her feet crunching on the white snow. But suddenly, she stopped, and as she did, she could hear a second pair of feet crunching the snow behind her. My mom panicked, but she continued forward and pretended that she hadn't heard anything. She thought it might have been another student making their way back to their living quarters. This thought made sense, but it didn't stop her from walking faster. As she began to pick up her pace, the crunching snow behind her also began to speed up. My mother couldn't handle the fear any longer and started running, but the thick snow made it difficult for her to run away quickly. She also gave a quick look behind her. She was greeted by the silhouette of a tall man only a few meters away and closing in. The man did not appear to be wearing a coat, despite the freezing temperature. The lack of lampposts made it difficult for my mom to make out anything else. However, that's not what scared my mom the most. She was eventually chased into an area that was lit by a dim light mounted to the side of a merchant stall. When she looked back, she was able to see that her pursuer was carrying a large plank in his hand. Now petrified, she continued to run and refused to look back again. Suddenly, she saw the light of a lamppost that was situated on a small street. Luckily that night, there happened to be a young couple walking towards her. With her last ounce of energy, my mom ran to them and collapsed. My mom was in hysterics when they asked her what was wrong. She explained to them what happened, but by then, the stranger had vanished. The couple that she ran into was living in the same apartment block as her and was familiar with her father. They accompanied her back home, and they told my grandfather where they found her. After the couple left, my mom couldn't stop crying out of shock and fear. From then on, my grandfather would meet my mom at the bus stop where she got off at, and they would walk home together. My mom never found out who her assailant was, and thankfully, she never had another encounter with him again. I was reading a story that reminded me of an event from over 20 years ago. It was around the second half of 1998. I had taken a security guard job at a plant that manufactured locks. I usually worked one of three shifts, 4 p.m. to 12 a.m., 7:30 p.m. to 3:30 a.m., 12 a.m. to 8 a.m. The 7:30-3:30 shift was for extra coverage, so there were always two of us from 7:30 to midnight. It was a very routine, boring job for the most part. We did our rounds, logged everything out of the ordinary, and watched a tiny monitor displaying the CCTV feed. Things went by in an almost peaceful manner. I worked, saved, bought a car, and had planned to move. By late March of 1999, I served my notice and prepared to head cross-country. A new hire was brought in to fill my spot, a soft-spoken man named Calvin. As part of his training, Calvin spent time working all three shifts. At night, he was a shadow, working by himself, getting a feel for the plant's nocturnal routines. Most nights he worked with myself and a female guard named Amira, who was around my age. I was 18 at the time. Calvin was about a decade or so older than us. He was quiet and polite, though something seemed to be missing. There's usually a spark that genuinely nice people seem to have, and it just wasn't there. Whenever he went on rounds with me, he would ask questions about the job and make small talk. I noticed that he was a bit odd, laughing at odd times and changing his tone mid-sentence. At the time, I chalked it up to him just being socially awkward, and that would pass. One night, near the end of his first week, he went on a round with Amira. When they returned to the office, I knew there was something wrong. Amira was normally very talkative, but she would barely say a word. I wasn't sure what happened. I waited until Calvin went to the restroom to ask. During their rounds, everything had been normal, until they reached the brass mill. It's a section of the plant that shut down around 6 a.m. There were usually no employees there after that time, and there were no lights on. They were making their way to a checkpoint on a landing atop a flight of stairs when the mood shifted. Amira told me that she turned around only to find he was right on her. Startled, she backed against the grating at the end of the landing, and he leaned in towards her, his face nearly touching hers. He said something flirtatious to her in a very low voice. When she mentioned his wedding band, he said, "It's gonna be over soon." From then on, I did the rounds, taking Calvin with me each time. The night ended without further incident, and I left a note for our supervisor, detailing what happened. The next night came and went, with no Calvin. I did the rounds while Amira stayed in the office. On my second to last shift, I came in to find Amira freaking out. She found out why Calvin hadn't been at work. Apparently, he had been arrested for murdering his wife. She had been dismembered and burned. Parts of her body had been placed in a pond less than a mile from where we worked. That night and the next, Amira called the jail just to make sure that they were still holding him. Based on the time frame, he had killed his wife months before he even started that job. There is an article linked below. This story didn't happen to me personally. It happened to two of my cousins. They gave me permission to share this story, so I will be telling it from their perspective. My name is Leah. This story happened in April of 2016. I was 29 years old at the time. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. In April, my cousin and I, who I'll refer to as Kate, wanted to go for a Caribbean getaway. But we didn't want to go to the popular tourist destinations, such as the Bahamas, Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, or Puerto Rico. So we chose a lesser-known island called Dominica. It's a small island located between Guadeloupe and Martinique, with a population of about 72,000. We booked an Airbnb in the countryside, about 30 minutes away from the capital city. The first 2 weeks went well. We rented a car, and the Airbnb was perfect, as it was located near a beach. It was the getaway that we needed. We explored the island, visited several waterfall locations, and even made some friends in the village we were staying at. But on the second day of the third week, something horrible happened. One afternoon, we didn't go out and decided just to spend time at the nearby beach with the locals. Later on, when the people left the beach to go home, Kate wanted to go back to the Airbnb, but I decided to stay there a while longer so I could have some alone time. I closed my eyes and laid down near the beach, enjoying the peace and quiet. I must have dozed off, because before I knew it, it was dark, so I decided it was a good time to head back. I arrived at the Airbnb, but as I was getting my keys to unlock the door, two men, wearing masks, came out of the bushes and started beating me with batons. One even threw a rock at me while I was down, causing me to scream in pain. Kate came out and tried to defend me, but the men also overpowered her. They ran into the Airbnb and ransacked the entire place. Some nearby villagers saw what was happening and quickly came to our aid, but by that time, the two men had already fled. They had taken my laptop, my phone, and my wallet. Luckily for us, our passports weren't stolen. We were both bleeding pretty badly. At some point, I felt like I was going to pass out. The police eventually showed up, and after receiving some medical assistance, we told them what happened. They were shocked. Dominica is usually a pretty safe country. Two of the villagers drove us to the hospital, which was located in the capital city of Roseau. We had to stay in the hospital for a while because our injuries were so bad. We even had to change our return flight. Thankfully, we got out alive. As far as I know, the two perpetrators who attacked us were never caught. This event has forever traumatized Kate and I. However, I still like Dominica and would love to go visit there again someday. But next time, I'll be a lot more cautious.